All right, Matt. So when I was a kid, my dad worked 12 hours a day just to put food on the table.
Man.
He was a great man, but a terribly slow cook.
I figured that was coming.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good deal. Good deal. So before we get into it, we'll say go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales, sign up to become a patron. We have three different levels that you can sign up for. Every level gets a bonus episode a week. If you move up to our five a month, then you get the bonus episode, plus you get ad-free audio and video versions of the episode. And the cool thing is those ad-free audio things will go straight to your podcatcher if you download the RSS feed. So you don't even have to change where you listen to get our ad-free episodes. Or if you move up to our $10 a month, then you get all of that. Plus you get our second show, Side Quest, which Matt and I love doing because it's a reprieve from mostly anything Graveyard Tales related. And it's just us talking, having a good time, playing games, trying to make the other laugh or freak the other one out.
Yeah, I got one that's going to freak Adam out tonight.
Great.
I have not told him what it is. It's a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to love it.
Yeah. Usually it's the other way around, because I like to tell Matt stories about people surviving things that they shouldn't have survived and giving him nightmares. So
closed spaces and
yep.
and things that are way up high.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm like, mm-hmm. No, I can't. I'm claustrophobic. If I think I can't get out of somewhere, and I am afraid of heights, or whatever that's called.
Heightophobic.
Heightophobic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I think there is a chance that I could fall,
mm-hmm.
if I'm enclosed, you could put me up in the moon. I'm okay. As long as I know there's no chance I could fall.
It's like Mike Rowe said, I'm not afraid of heights. I'm afraid of widths. So
Mike Rowe said that?
Yep, Mike Rowe said that. I used to watch Dirty before. Jobs all the time. So
I'm afraid of wits.
Yep. But go over there to patreon.com/graveyardtales and sign up. We love all of our patrons. You help keep Matt and I going. Our patrons are what has kept us going for the 9 years or so. 9 years that we've been doing this?
9 years, man. It's unbelievable.
Can you imagine? We were both young and virile when we started this. At least younger and more virile.
I'm old and decrepit now.
Yeah, exactly.
At least according to the rest of my family.
Yeah. I'm the old man now in my house. So,
that's right.
But also go check out our sponsors. We put the link in the show notes with our promo code so you can check it out, get you something that we enjoy, and you can get a discount on there. Matt and I only talk about companies or services that we really enjoy. So if we talk about them, know that we have tried them and we enjoy them and we think you guys will too. Share the show. You know, we don't talk about this a lot, but we talked about it for a while and then we had people complain that we were talking about it too much, but I'm going to talk about it again because it's our show, dadgummit. We had an issue early on this year with Apple Podcasts and them turning off the automatic downloads for the show. So a lot of people probably not listening right now because they forgot about us because they're not getting the automatic downloads. So if you would share the show and let's help get those listeners back to where they've got the automatic downloads on again and they see us, they hear us, and you know, we'll keep doing that until Apple does it again and screws us up one more time. So just share the show, get us out there on your Instagram, your Facebook, whether you tick or talk. We've started a TikTok thing now. Matt is running it. So go over there and check out our TikTok and share some of that stuff, but just share Graveyard Tales. So on that note, Matt, why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
Okay. So we've kind of made a little series here. Last week when we talked about the Monmouth Inn, while doing that research, we realized that there were a lot of other haunted places in Natchez, Mississippi, and we felt that we weren't doing it justice by leaving those out. So we're going to catch a couple more tonight. So we're staying in Natchez, and we're going to talk about the Dunleith Inn and possibly the most haunted place in Natchez, which is King's Tavern.
I was going to say, Matt, not possibly talk about it. We are talking about it.
We are going to talk about it.
You confused me.
I did. This is possibly the most haunted place, but we are definitely going to talk about it tonight. All right. So we're gonna split this up. So this will be a little bit different. We're going to discuss the history of the Dunleith and the hauntings that go on there. And then we're going to jump to King's Tavern and do the same thing. So you don't have to go back and go, which place are they talking about? So we're going to talk about the Dunleith in its entirety. And then we're going to talk about King's Tavern. And I'll tell you, for a small town like Natchez, which I have actually been to Natchez. You wouldn't expect this much haunted activity.
Right.
I mean, you don't. We hear about little towns that have a haunted whatever there. You don't hear so much about little towns that have multiple haunted locations that are this active. So.
Right. That's true. Now, as we always say, go check our sources down at the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all the information. If we talk about it, it's sourced and referenced down in the show notes. Now, some homes are remembered because of the people who lived in them. Others are remembered because of what they survived. But Dunleith is both. So today, Dunleith is one of the most recognizable antebellum homes in Mississippi. Visitors immediately notice the massive white columns wrapping around the mansion, the sprawling grounds, and the unmistakable grandeur of the estate. It looks almost untouched by time, but appearances can be deceiving. Long before Dunleith became one of the South's finest historic inns, the land witnessed frontier settlement, devastating fire, slavery, civil war, financial collapse, and ultimately remarkable preservation. So its story begins decades before the mansion itself ever existed. During the late 1700s, Natchez wasn't yet the thriving southern city that most people picture today. In fact, it was still under Spanish control. Well, following the American Revolution, Spain governed much of the lower Mississippi Valley, encouraging settlement by offering generous land grants to pioneers willing to develop the frontier. So one of those settlers was a man named Job Ruth. Might be Ralph. I couldn't find exactly how to say it. R-O-U-T-H. Probably Ralph.
Well, you never know. I had a buddy in high school whose last name was spelled this way, and it was Ruth.
Yeah, you never know. And it's definitely Job because nobody calls their kid Job. so it's Job.
Did you ever watch Arrested Development?
Yes. Yes.
And he was Job, G-O-B, uh-huh. And all these people would call him Gob.
Gob, yeah.
Look, that was one of the funniest running jokes of that show, I thought, man, they called him Gob, and it's so funny.
I did not think about that until you just said that, but yep. So, Gob Ruth, around the 1790s, Ralph received approximately 40 acres of land just outside Natchez. Like many early settlers, he built a plantation home and a collection of practical outbuildings that supported everyday life. He called the property, get this, Ralphland.
Which, hey, you know, go with what you know.
Dude, if I get any type of acreage, you better believe I'm coming up with a name for it.
Ballinger so, Land?
Yeah, Ballin Land or something, probably. So, Now, it wasn't a mansion, but it was a working estate. Yeah. Over time, barns, carriage houses, kitchens, dairies, and workshops were added to the property as the plantation grew. Well, remarkably, several of those original buildings still stand today, making them some of the oldest surviving structures in Natchez. They're actually older than the mansion that visitors come to see today. So if you go out there to look, ooh, the Dunleith, it's old. Look at the things standing beside it. They're even older.
Yeah, that's right.
So pretty crazy. But as Job grew older, ownership of the estate eventually passed to his daughter, Mary. Now, her life would become closely tied to the future of the property. Unfortunately, tragedy arrived early. Mary became a widow while she was still very young. Years later, she remarried, and her second husband would forever change the estate. His name was General Charles Gustav Dahlgren. I don't know why, out of all those names, Charles was the one I had trouble.
That was the one you tripped over.
Yeah. My granddad's name was Charles, and I still went, Char. I don't know.
What'd he do? Did he paint it blue or something?
Yeah, he put
changed fake, it forever.
He put fake flowers out in front of the house.
That's blasphemy in the South.
It is. I've got a neighbor that does that right across the street from me. Her whole front garden flower bed is fake flowers that she changes every year. And I'm not talking normal size flowers. I'm talking these things are 2 feet in diameter. Big.
Oh.
Fake flowers out in her front flower bed. You know, they stay pretty longer than my flowers do because they don't die. Exactly right. But, you know, it's just okay. So Dahlgren's story sounds almost too interesting to be true. He wasn't born in Mississippi. He wasn't even born in America. Charles Dahlgren was born in Sweden before immigrating to the United States as a young man. Well, like many ambitious immigrants during the early 19th century, he saw enormous opportunity in the rapidly growing Mississippi frontier. He became a lawyer, a banker, a planter, and a businessman. So Dahlgren wasn't simply interested in making money, though. He had an unusually scientific mind for his time. He constantly experimented with agriculture, looking for better farming methods, more efficient equipment, and improved ways to manage plantations. Friends described him as endlessly curious, always looking for ways to improve whatever he touched. So, as Mississippi's cotton economy exploded, Dahlgren prospered alongside it. By the 1850s, he had become one of the wealthiest men in Natchez. Naturally, he wanted a home that reflected that success. Ironically, he never intended to build one, because in the beginning, Ralphland already served as the family home. Then nature intervened. In 1855, lightning struck the house. The bolt ignited a fire that quickly spread through the wooden structure. So as we've said before, these houses during that time, super flammable.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Somebody farts in the kitchen and lights the whole neighborhood on fire.
Oh, yeah.
They go up.
You know, lightning strike starting a fire. You know, there's so many things that, you know, 200, 300 years ago, we don't worry as much about now. This, the lightning strike starting a fire, a house fire, is still a thing.
Still a problem. Yep.
You know, I mean, look, you don't run around. You don't have a bunch of houses with lightning rods on them.
Right.
Or anything like that. I guess... You don't hear about it as much, but it still happens.
It does. It does. 2 years ago, you probably remember me sending you the video. I still have the video. 2 years ago, lightning struck as a storm was coming through my neighbor's tree out in front of the house. So right next door, lightning hit this tree and basically blew this tree up, and my doorbell camera caught the whole thing. So
good night.
It were close to the house, but didn't hit the house.
Hey, I'm looking up something. 4,200 lightning related house fires in 2025.
Dang.
4,200.
That's about 4,199 more than I would think.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest. I did not think it would be that high, but I knew I made that comment because I was like, it's still an issue and it still happens. I mean, there could have been 4,200. If 4,200 happened, you know, during the era we're talking about, it would have wiped out an entire state.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Mississippi wouldn't have made it. Like,
man, that is nuts. I didn't expect it to be that high.
Yeah.
So you learn something with Graveyard Tales.
Tonight. You do. Even we do. I mean, we learn stuff while recording that we didn't think we would learn.
That's right.
So that's why I like doing this show. Despite every effort to save it, the original Routhland Mansion burned to the ground. So imagine standing on the property and watching your home just disappear in flames. Years of memories, family heirlooms, everything was consumed in a single night. Now, most people would have rebuilt something similar, but Charles Dahlgren had another idea. If he had to start over, he was going to build something extraordinary. So construction began almost immediately. It was completed in 1856, and the new mansion became one of the architectural masterpieces in the American South. Even today, Dunleith is unique. Most antebellum mansions feature grand columns across the front facade. Dunleith has columns on every side. 26 enormous Tuscan columns completely surround the house, making it the only surviving antebellum mansion in Mississippi with a full encircling colonnade. The design,
it is really unique. It is a cool looking house. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it stands out. If you were to put it in like a police lineup with other houses, you would pick out that house as the one that stole your car.
That's right.
That's sure. There's no way it could hide. Now, the design wasn't just beautiful. It was practical. The wraparound gallery shaded the home from Mississippi's relentless summer heat while allowing breezes to circulate through open windows long before air conditioning existed. Inside, the house was equally impressive. Massive rooms, towering ceilings, elegant staircases, intricate plasterwork. They had hand-forged iron railings and floor-to-ceiling windows that could be opened like doors to catch every available breeze. I want those, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to have floor-to-ceiling windows in my living room. I need some big curtains because I always like to pull the curtains when it gets dark. I don't want peeping Toms, but not that they got much to see, but you know, if I want to walk through my underwear, I don't want my neighbor seeing it.
Yeah. Floor to ceiling windows. It's like you're giving them an HD TV to watch you.
Pretty much. And I'm going to leave all the lights on in the house and just my neighbors will sit there on my front yard with their lawn chairs, just watching my family.
Watch this show.
Yeah. It's like Ashley watches Big Brother and she'll do the camera feeds when they're not showing whatever. Yeah. It would be that, but just in real life. It wouldn't be crazy people that they stick in a house together. Wait a minute. It'd still be crazy people in a house together. Never mind. So the mansion reflected everything prosperous Southern families wanted the world to see. Wealth, sophistication, success. And surrounding the home were gardens, carriage roads, and numerous service buildings that supported daily life. The surviving carriage house, dairy barn, poultry house, and dependency building connected the new mansion to the original Routhland estate, creating a rare blend of late 18th century and antebellum architecture on one property. Like every great estate in Natchez, however, Dunleith existed because of enslaved labor. The mansion wasn't simply built for wealthy families, it was built by skilled enslaved craftsmen. They made bricks, raised the walls, cut timber, forged iron, installed floors, and constructed outbuildings. And once the construction ended, they maintained every aspect of the estate. The grandeur of Dunleith cannot really be separated from the people who worked there and them making it possible. It's just part of the history that we have to talk about. Now, ironically, as John Hackinson enjoyed Monmouth that we talked about before for only a short time, Charles Dahlgren's family experienced their own heartbreak. Mary Dahlgren died not long after the magnificent new mansion was completed. So sad when that happens. Mm-hmm. Somebody gets the house they want, and then they kick the bucket. And then they just have to stay around and haunt it to That's be able right. to enjoy
it. Seemed, it seemed to happen a lot.
It did, yeah. We've talked about it many times.
Hey, Adam, let's take a minute and talk about tonight's sponsor, Forkful Meals. Now, you know, I'm busy as all get out. I mean, I work multiple jobs. You know, I got kids playing sports and school is starting back up.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, it is a nightmare. And then to add trying to fix a meal, you know, especially dinner, you know, with one going this way and one going that way and me going 3-4 different ways, it's almost impossible. And Forkful Meals really makes it easy. And we had a night come up just in the last week or so where we were scratching our heads. We didn't know what we were going to do. And I said, hey, it's a Forkful Meal kind of night. So
there you go.
We, you know, everybody went in there, grabbed what they wanted. We fixed it up and everybody had a really good meal. And I had the pulled brisket with cheesy cauliflower. And I'm telling you, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, it was unbelievable. In fact, I kept having to take my fork and fight Amanda and one of the kids from digging it out of my meal because it was so good.
Yep. And that's the thing. They are flavorful, functional, healthy meals. So they have zero seed oils. They are chef cooked, fresh, never frozen, and they're ready to eat meals when you get them. And I know for mine, 2 minutes in the microwave, done. You got you a fresh, healthy meal. They're made with high-quality premium proteins, grass-fed bison, wild-caught salmon, and fresh vegetables. And they've got a menu that fits your lifestyle and meal preferences. So they've got gluten-free, dairy-free, keto, plant-based, GLP-1, and low-carb meals. And I did the low-carb, high-protein meals for mine. Loved it. They did a great job. Eating well doesn't need to be complicated. With the fully prepared, delicious, healthy meals that you get from Forkful, there's no meal prep, no cooking or cleanup, just clean flavor and ready in under 3 minutes. And it's delivered right to your door within 24 to 48 hours of you ordering. So explore the plans and the menu of fresh, ready-to-eat meals at ForkfulMeals.com and use our promo code GRAVE, G-R-A-V-E, to get 50% off your first order.
That's ForkfulMeals.com/GRAVE and use our promo code GRAVE, G-R-A-V-E, for 50% off. Thanks to Forkful for sponsoring this episode.
Now, the house that had been built to symbolize a prosperous future quickly became associated with personal loss. A few years later, in 1858, Dahlgren sold the estate to wealthy planter Alfred Vidal Davis. It was Davis who renamed the property Dunleith. The name has remained ever since. But the timing couldn't have been worse. Only a few years later, America descended into civil war. By 1861, the nation had fractured. Mississippi joined the Confederacy, and the lives of wealthy plantation owners changed forever. Natchez was eventually occupied by Union forces in 1863. Well, unlike many southern cities, however, it escaped widespread destruction, like we talked about last episode. Because there were no major battles fought inside Natchez itself, Dunleith survived the war physically intact. The mansion stood, the society that created it did not. Although the mansion remained standing, maintaining such an enormous estate became increasingly difficult as the decades passed. So one of the most fascinating people connected to Dunleith after the Civil War wasn't one of the wealthy owners. It was a man named John Roy Lynch. He was born into slavery in Louisiana. Lynch eventually found work at Dunleith following emancipation. His story is one of the most remarkable examples of perseverance during Reconstruction. He educated himself, entered politics, and eventually became the first African-American speaker of the Mississippi House of Representatives. Later, he served in the United States Congress. His journey from slavery to national political office is almost unbelievable, and it serves as a reminder that the history of places like Dunleith didn't end with the Civil War. There were entirely new chapters that got written. But as the 20th century arrived, Dunleith faced many of the same challenges as other antebellum homes. Maintenance was expensive, historic homes fell out of fashion, and across the South, countless mansions disappeared forever. Fortunately, Dunleith survived. Its extraordinary architecture made it impossible to ignore. Eventually, preservationists recognized the importance, and the mansion received designation as, guess what, a National Historic Landmark. Why are these popping up all the time in our episodes lately? Later,
you look for one, and you start getting all the other ones.
That's a valid point. Later, it was restored and transformed into the beautiful historic inn that welcomes guests today. Unlike many museums, Dunleith remains a living property. Visitors can sleep in the historic rooms. You can walk among buildings that have stood for more than two centuries. And you can eat in the restored carriage house and experience a home that spans nearly the entire history of Natchez itself. Today, visitors often arrive expecting nothing more than another beautiful southern mansion, but they discover a place that tells a story of America itself. And very few homes have experienced such dramatic change while remaining standing through it all. Perhaps that's why Dunleith has become more than simply a historic inn. It has become a keeper of stories. And those stories are ones that people stop in the middle of the night and ask employees questions about what they experienced. And then they leave convinced that they weren't entirely alone.
Now, because of all that history and everything involved with it, we can understand why Dunleith might be haunted. Okay. But if you've ever seen the pictures, and Adam and I talked about how unique the house looked with the columns that go all the way around, it almost looks like a Greek temple that fell out in Mississippi.
Yep.
I mean, it's gorgeous. And when you look at it, you naturally think, man, that place has got to be haunted. Okay, yeah. And you'd probably be right. Now, unlike the Monmouth, which we talked about last week, Dunleith doesn't have one famous ghost that everybody can agree on. There isn't a General Quitman-type figure whose story ties everything together. But instead, these reports are a little quieter and almost subtle. Honestly, to me, sometimes those are the best stories. They're the ones that really stick with you.
Mm-hmm.
One of the oldest legends involves something guests say they hear rather than see. Music.
Mm.
Specifically, the soft sound of a harp, which is not music that you typically hear.
No.
Okay? Imagine you're staying in this enormous 19th century mansion, and it's late at night. Hallways are quiet. And all the other guests have gone to bed. And then somewhere off in the distance, you hear someone gently playing a harp.
Yeah.
Not loudly. Not like there's a concert going on downstairs. Just enough to know that you're hearing music.
The only thing crazier would be if you heard someone gently playing an oboe way off in the distance.
Yes, that would be weirder. Definitely.
Where did you get an oboe in the afterlife? I don't.
Well, what was that? Oh, there's a cartoon on Netflix called Haunted Hotel. If you haven't checked it out, go check it out. It's pretty funny. But there's one part where there's this guy at one of the ghosts, and he's like, he's got his guitar, and they're like, where did you get a guitar in the afterlife? And he's like, we died holding our instruments, so we've all got them in the afterlife. And he's like, we made a band. And years. And they're just jamming out. You know, what some luck. Guy's got just like an accordion, you know, he's playing his guitar. I was like, yeah, so if you die holding an oboe, you will get to have an oboe in the afterlife.
Please don't die holding an oboe.
Choose your instruments well.
Exactly. I'm going to ask on my deathbed that somebody hands me a guitar.
Yes, please. No, so give him a harp.
Oh, jeez.
Here, hold this harp.
The giant, I'm laying on my deathbed and a giant floor harp is just laid on me. Yes. What killed him? Was it old age or the harp?
But, you know, if you heard that, you would assume, like I would, that somebody has left a television on. Or for some reason, someone is listening to harp music on their phone. But who the does? Sound, it doesn't really seem to have a single source. It just kind of drifts through the house. And people have reported going to look for the source, and they only find empty rooms. There's no musician. There's no recording. There's no obvious explanation. But it's become such a well-known part of Dunley's legend that many people believe the music belongs to a woman whose spirit still remains in the house. Now, who that woman actually was, well, the details get a little fuzzy. Some believe that it's Mary Ruth Dahlgren. Mary moved into the newly completed mansion with her family, but tragically died, as Adam said, only a few months later. And if you've listened to enough paranormal stories, you know early deaths often become woven into the local folklore, whether there's any real connection or not. And it's important to point out here, there's no historical record that says Mary played the harp. There's no diary that says she promised to haunt the place.
Yep.
So that that connection comes entirely from the local tradition. But still, when guests start reporting mysterious music in the middle of the night, people naturally go look through the house's history for something who might explain it.
Yep.
But the music isn't the only thing that guests have reported. Several visitors have described hearing footsteps in empty hallways, which I think that is a prerequisite to say that your hotel is haunted.
Oh, yeah.
I've never looked into a haunted hotel where footsteps in the hallway weren't a thing. So if you don't, if you've got, you look, you could have a poltergeist living in room 301. If they don't make stomping noises down the hallway, your hotel is not haunted.
Yeah,
not,
you don't not get officially. The official. So, haunted card.
That's right. So. That's right. This thing will throw a Barca lounger out the window, but it doesn't stomp around in the hallway.
It doesn't count.
Yeah, that's right. Now, other people have experienced doors opening on their own or the unsettling feeling that someone is standing just behind them. You know that feeling.
Oh, yeah.
You turn around just sure that somebody has walked up behind you or standing a little too close, but there's nobody there. And then there are the sightings. Now, over the years, guests have reported seeing a woman dressed in white, of course, standing quietly in the hallways or near the staircase. Usually she doesn't move. She doesn't speak. She simply appears for a moment and then she's gone. Now, again, people automatically believe that this is Mary. Others simply refer to her as the Lady of Dunleith, which, again, would have been Mary, I presume. But
yeah.
No one really knows. But here's the part of the story that I find especially interesting. Years ago, a historical researcher interviewed one of the employees at Dunleith and asked the question that everyone wanted to ask. Is this place haunted? Now, you might expect the employee to laugh it off or maybe launch into some dramatic ghost story, but instead, she reportedly gave a very matter-of-fact answer. She said, strange things do happen. Guests have reported seeing and hearing unusual things. But the staff's attitude is basically they don't bother us and we don't bother them.
I like that attitude.
I don't know why, but that somehow is a little creepier than someone trying to convince me that every room is just full of ghosts.
Yeah, it is, because they've resigned themselves to the fact that it's haunted and they're not trying to make a buck on it. They're just like, hey, stuff happens here. We're used to it and we go on about our lives.
That's it. It's part of the routine. I think it's kind of how my parents and my sister and I feel about our house, you know, the house we grew up in, the house that my parents still live in. We've had so many weird things happen there that we don't try to convince anyone. I'll share the stories. Especially around Halloween, you know, Amanda will be like, hey, tell them about your mom and dad's house. And, you know, but it happens so much and still does that we just kind of accept it and you just move on. Nothing's ever been malevolent. And that's the way the staff at the Dunleith is. They're just, we get guests report weird things all the time. It's just part of this, you know.
Right.
And I think it really contributes to Dunleith's interesting reputation. You know, it's not known for terrifying hauntings. People aren't running screaming from their rooms. The stories are quieter. You know, a few unexplained footsteps, a woman who appears only for a moment, music with no visible musician. It's just enough to make you stop and listen and wonder if you're really alone. Skeptics will point out that old houses make strange sounds, which is true. And acoustics can play tricks on you, which is also true. And once you've checked into a place that's advertised as haunted, your brain has a funny way of turning every creak into a ghost story. That is a fair point.
True.
But just like Monmouth, what keeps these legends alive isn't one spectacular event. It's the fact that visitors keep reporting many of the same experiences. It's not dramatic. It's not violent. It's just strange. And sometimes those are the stories that are the hardest to shake. Because if you wake up in the middle of the night and hear someone softly playing harp music somewhere in the darkness, well, I'm not sure I care whether it's a ghost or not. I'm probably just going to stay in my room until breakfast.
Right.
So, just very similar to the Monmouth. It's not big. It's not flashy. But at its core, it seems real. There's something about it. You know, the staff feels it. Visitors feel it. It just exudes their spiritual energy here. So,
yep.
And, you know, sometimes, like I said, that can be the creepiest part of visiting a quote unquote haunted hotel.
Right. For sure. All right. So let's talk about King's Tavern now. And when people visit King's Tavern today, they usually come for one reason, because they've heard it's haunted. But before any of those stories began, and before anyone whispered about ghosts, King's Tavern already lived an incredible life. So it's not just an old restaurant. It's one of the oldest surviving buildings in Mississippi, a place that watched empires changed. It welcomed thousands of travelers, and it stood through more than 2.5 centuries of American history. Now, Matt, I don't know how much you know about King's Tavern history, but this floored me when doing this research, how much happened at King's Tavern.
I know it's crazy that this place would get this much action. I'm with you. I thought, golly, how did this place?
Yeah. Just one little place.
Wind up in the center of all this.
Right. Exactly. Well, King's Tavern dates back to 1769. That alone makes it remarkable. The building, standing today, has survived from before there was a United States. before Mississippi was even a territory and before the American Revolution had begun. When it was constructed, Natchez wasn't an established American town. It was rough frontier settlement under British control. Just a few years earlier, Britain had taken possession of the region after defeating France in the French and Indian War. To secure their new territory, the British built nearby Fort Panmure on the bluff overlooking the Mississippi River. King's Tavern was originally built as a blockhouse that supported the fort. It wasn't intended to be a cozy inn or a gathering place or anything. It was a practical frontier structure designed to serve as a military outpost on the edge of Britain's expanding empire. Building anything on the frontier wasn't easy. There was no lumber mills nearby that you could visit. There wasn't a warehouse full of construction materials waiting to be delivered. Couldn't just call up the Home Depot and have them send you stuff, you know. Builders had to improvise. Large beams were hauled all the way from New Orleans after being salvaged from worn-out sailing ships. Other timbers came from flatboats that had floated down the Ohio and Mississippi rivers carrying goods to Natchez. Well, those boats couldn't make the trip back upstream, so their owners dismantled them and sold the lumber, turning transportation into building material.
Good idea.
Yeah. Even the bricks were different. Instead of kiln-fired bricks, many were simply dried in the sun before being laid into place. So the result was a sturdy little building unlike anything around it, and remarkably, much of that original 18th century wood still exists today, which is, again, remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a theory. And if anybody knows anything about wood, you're going to go, Matt, you're an idiot. And this may be true, but I wonder, because it was built, the lumber that was used had been in the water, you know, the salt water from the ships coming from New Orleans, you know, fresh water flowing down the Mississippi. It makes me wonder, because, you know, if you leave wood in water long enough, it's going to rot. But I wonder if they I don't know anything about shipbuilding, and certainly not shipbuilding from, you know, the 1600s, 1700s. What makes me wonder, did they treat the wood somehow? Did they use some kind of like wax? They had to, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just isn't naturally, you know, you just can't stick wood together and go, here's my boat and go sailing across the ocean. I mean, so that would have had some type of treatment to make it watertight. And I wonder, because they used that wood particularly, if that somehow allowed it to survive all these years.
That's very possible. Because usually when you hear someone say, go swab the deck, they were putting a tar on the deck to keep it waterproof.
Yeah. With a Q-tip.
With a Q-tip.
It's like, damn, it's going to take forever.
Yeah, go Q-tip the deck, matey. And so it could be that not only the treatment of the wood to make it waterproof, but maybe the reaction of the salt water to the treatment caused it to last even longer.
Yeah, these are the theories that I pull out from my rear end. And I throw them out when Adam and I are just talking. These are also facts that I tell my children to be the gospel truth.
Yep.
Okay. And so that maybe when they're adults, they will spout this out.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope maybe I'm right. And then my kids sound smart.
I do that to Ash and Michael all the time. I just start telling them something as if I knew what I was talking about.
That's exactly right.
And Michael will start looking it up later and go, that's not true. I'm like, yeah, but you believe me.
Yeah, right, right. What's wrong with that?
So for about 20 years, the building quietly served its purpose while governments changed around it. The British eventually lost control of the region. Spanish forces took Natchez in 1779 during the American Revolution. Yet despite changing flags and changing rulers, the little blockhouse remained. It just adapted. Now, that ability to survive would become one of King's Tavern's defining characteristics. Everything changed in 1789. That year, a businessman named Richard King purchased the old military building. King had come south from New York looking for opportunity, and he saw exactly that in this sturdy frontier structure. Well, instead of using it for military purposes, he transformed it into something the growing community desperately needed: an inn, a tavern, and a stagecoach stop. Eventually, even the town's post office was inside the King's Tavern. Before long, everyone simply referred to it as King's Tavern. So Richard King wasn't just serving food and drinks. He was accidentally creating one of the busiest gathering places in that region. So imagine walking through those front doors around the year 1795. You got a fireplace that's roaring. The smell of roasted meat is filling the room. Candles flicker against rough wooden beams that had once crossed the decks of ships sailing the Gulf of Mexico, and dozens of conversations are happening all at once. One table might hold merchants discussing prices for tobacco and flour. Another might be occupied by soldiers. Nearby sits a family beginning a long journey west. Across the room, you've got exhausted flatboatmen that are celebrating after weeks floating downriver. It wasn't quiet. It was loud, crowded, dirty, and alive, and King's Tavern became the social center of the frontier. One reason the tavern became so successful was because of the travelers it served. Thousands of men floated goods down the Ohio and the Mississippi rivers every year aboard enormous flatboats loaded with produce, whiskey, livestock, timber, and supplies. Once they reached Natchez, their job was finished. So they sold the cargo, and a lot of people even sold the boats themselves, like I talked about, for lumber and building materials. But now they got a problem. They still got to get home. There's no railways, there's no cars, and no steamboats yet capable of carrying passengers back upriver. So their only option, Matt, is you got to walk.
Ugh. You know.
No. Yeah. I live in Mississippi now. That's exactly right.
Hey, we were talking about, we had a friend that just recently went to Bali.
Mm.
And Amanda said, she told her that the flight was like 34 hours.
Uh-uh.
And Amanda goes, I would just have to live there. Because yeah. I was like, I'm not doing that again. I live here now. So I can, mm-hmm. I can totally see. It's like, you mean I have to walk? Nope.
Yeah. No, thanks.
Now I'm a resident.
Mm-hmm. What? Give me my boat back. I'm going to build a house out of it.
That's right.
The journey followed the famous Natchez Trace, a rugged trail stretching hundreds of miles north through forests, swamps, and wilderness. Before beginning that dangerous trek, many travelers spent one last comfortable night at King's Tavern. So they got a hot meal, a soft bed, and some drinks. Maybe they played one last card game before they set off into the unknown. But for many of them, this was the final taste of civilization before weeks on the trail. Richard King quickly became one of the best-known men in town because he also handled the local mail. People naturally gathered outside his tavern, waiting for letters from distant family members, business partners, or loved ones. And mail day wasn't just about receiving news. It became a community event. People lingered on the front steps, reading letters aloud, catching up on gossip, making business deals, and exchanging stories from every corner of the growing frontier. If you wanted to know what was happening in the region, you went to King's Tavern. Well, of course, not every guest was respectable. Frontier taverns attracted every kind of traveler imaginable. Merchants, hunters, politicians, riverboat crews, gamblers, professional drifters, sometimes even men that had a far darker reputation.
Darker than a professional drifter?
And darker than a politician, too.
No lie.
History tells us that some of America's earliest serial killers, the Hart brothers, spent time around Natchez during these same years. So local tradition says they occasionally stopped at King's Tavern while moving through the area. Whether that's true or not, we don't know. But it's very possible. The tavern sat at the crossroads of a dangerous frontier where honest travelers and dangerous outlaws often cross paths under the same roof. That reality alone gives the building an atmosphere that's difficult to recreate today. Well, by the early 1800s, the world was changing. The invention and growing popularity of the steamboat transformed travel along the Mississippi. For the first time, travelers no longer had to walk hundreds of miles home. They could simply board another boat and head back upstream. Well, almost overnight, the steady stream of customers that had made King's Tavern so successful began to disappear. Business slowed, the frontier was changing, and by 1817, Richard King sold the tavern. The building that had once echoed with the voices of soldiers, traders, and travelers settled into a much quieter life as a private residence. For generation after generation, families just lived there. While grand mansions were built across Natchez during the cotton boom, the humble old tavern remained standing. It didn't need the towering columns or elaborate ballrooms. Its value came from something rarer, authenticity. It had already witnessed history that many of those larger homes never could. It had stood through changing governments, frontier expansion, and the earliest days of the American Southwest. As the 20th century arrived, historians and preservationists began recognizing just how important the old building really was. Rather than allowing it to disappear, they restored it and eventually reopened it as a restaurant, giving visitors the rare opportunity to eat inside of one of Mississippi's oldest surviving structures. Today, when people step through those doors, they're walking on floors worn smooth by centuries of boots. They're sitting beneath beams cut from 18th century ships, and they're eating inside walls that have survived British rule, Spanish rule, the birth of the United States, the Civil War, Reconstruction, and everything that followed. Very few buildings anywhere in America can claim a history quite like that. And yet, for all that incredible history, most people don't come here because of Richard King. They don't come because of frontier travelers or military blockhouses. They come because somewhere along the way, people began saying the tavern wasn't empty, that some of its oldest guests never actually checked out. So that's where we're going to leave my section and go over to Matt, because he's going to tell you about all the earned reputation that the King's Tavern has.
Now, if these old walls could talk, they'd probably have enough stories to keep this show going on for another 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, with the history they saw, it's just unfathomable. Now, like Adam said, it was built around 1789, and King's Tavern is believed to be the oldest standing building in Natchez. That's an incredible thought when you stop and consider it. This place has been around since George Washington was president. I mean, mm-hmm. before Mississippi was a state, I mean, just all of the different people from different walks of life that pass through those doors, and the different industries that it served and that were present there, you know, from being a tavern to an inn to a trading post, post office, and now a restaurant. And it's so much history packed into this little building. And if you go and look at photos of it, it's incredible. I mean, you know, when you look at this building, you're just thinking, God, can you imagine that there was somebody that showed up here on a regular basis to either get their mail or to have a drink or just to kind of get off the road a little bit, and they could have had a conversation and go, what do you think about this man, Washington? But, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, they don't have a president yet, but they're discussing right. The fact that this fella named Washington that was a general could be what, you know, a president. What is a president? I mean, those were the conversations that were here. And when you have that much history, you know, it you know, there is some definite, you know, energy that's going to get left behind. It's just been around too long. Now, one of the legends, one of the ghost stories that is the most famous is the legend of a young woman named Madeline. Now, according to local folklore, Madeline worked at King's Tavern sometime during the late 1700s. The story says that she became romantically involved with Richard King. Now, whether that relationship actually existed, it's not clear. There are no surviving records proving that that affair ever happened. But according to the legend, Richard King's wife eventually discovered what was going on. She went through his phone, saw the text.
Yeah.
And she didn't take it very well. The story claims that Madeline was murdered. Her body was hidden inside the walls, or depending on which version you hear, inside the old chimney of the tavern. Now, for years, it was just a ghost story until renovations reportedly uncovered human remains concealed inside the building.
What?
Along with a single earring. Now, that is the part that really captured people's imagination.
Well, yeah.
Were these remains actually Madeline's? Nobody knows. There's no forensic evidence linking this skeleton to the legend. There's no historical records identifying the remains. In fact, some historians believe the entire Madeline story may have been created after the bones were discovered. But other people think the legend existed first and the discovery simply gave it new life. Either way, it's one of those mysteries that's almost impossible to untangle 200 years later. But the fact is, somebody's body was hidden inside King's Tavern. So even if the Madeline story isn't the real story, there's a story about somebody's corpse being hidden inside there.
Right.
You know, so, right. You know, you can believe whatever you want as far as this Madeline story goes. But there's no denying that they found human remains and an earring inside King's Tavern. You know, and it wasn't sitting in a chair in the corner either. I mean, it was hidden.
Right. Right. How often do we get that? Not that often.
Mm-mm.
You know, you hear some places in the UK and stuff that they found bodies in the walls of the castles, but not in the United States.
Yeah. I mean,
they don't just find bodies in walls normally here, especially when there's a ghost story talking about a lady that haunts the place because she was murdered in the inn and stuck in the, or in the tavern and stuck in the wall.
Yeah. Right.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's not one you hear every day. Now, guests and employees have reported seeing a young woman dressed in period clothing wandering through the dining rooms. Sometimes she's standing near the massive fireplace. Other times she's quietly walking through the building before she disappears around a corner. And by the time someone follows her, there's no one there. One detail that comes up surprisingly often is the smell of roses. Now, imagine you're just walking through an empty room. There's no flowers. There's no perfume. There's no air freshener that you can see. But then suddenly, the unmistakable scent of fresh roses just fills the air. Several witnesses have described exactly that. According to local tradition, the fragrance is said to announce Madeline's presence. Now, I don't know if ghosts have a favorite perfume, but if mine does, I hope it's something better than, you know, Ode to Home Depot after spending all weekend doing yard work. I mean, come on. You know, roses would be, I'll take it. Okay.
I'd take Ode de Lumber Mill. Yeah. I like sawdust.
Maybe some cedar mixed in there. Yeah. Smell like a humidor, you know, there something you like go. That.
There you go. Mahogany and maple sawdust.
We're just giving like a bed, a Bath and Body Works review right here, you know.
Yeah.
Mahogany and teak wood, you know, smelling.
Trying to, look, if you want to draw me and Matt in, make the place smell like sawdust.
Yeah,
we'll
yeah,
be there.
Right. We'll be there. Don't make it smell like, you know, sweaty yard clothes.
No.
Cut grass and body odor.
right.
But.
Cut grass and, what is it? Onion soup.
Oh,
French
God,
onion soup.
What? Did somebody just mow the yard and make onion soup?
Yeah, right. I don't know, but they were in Walmart yesterday. I'll tell you that if they did. Good grief. I know it's Walmart,
gosh.
People, but take a bath before
I'm
you go to Walmart.
You, well,
come on, please.
We have gone off the rails now.
Very. Sorry. You brought up body odor.
I did. It's just my fault. I took us there. But these reports of haunted activity don't stop with Madeline. Employees have described hearing footsteps upstairs when the building was empty. Shadow figures have reportedly been seen moving through the hallways. Doors have opened and closed on their own. Some staff members have said they caught movement out of the corner of their eye, only to find no one there when they turned to look. Now, these are all stories we've heard before at other haunted locations, but King's Tavern seems different because there isn't just one ghost being reported. Some witnesses will describe Madeline. Others report dark human-shaped figures that don't resemble her at all. It's almost as if whatever history this building has accumulated over the last two centuries, it didn't leave with the people who made it. And then there are the overnight guests. Back when rooms were available upstairs, visitors occasionally reported hearing footsteps outside their doors in the middle of the night. Some would describe knocks that came with no one outside. Others claimed doors would open by themselves. A few even reported waking with the unmistakable feeling that someone was standing in the room watching them. And you've all heard me say, this is something I cannot tolerate.
Don't like
it. You know, Adam and I both, we've stayed in some pretty old hotels. I mean, truthfully, the pipes will sound like somebody bowling in the attic. I mean, somebody turns on the faucet in the bathroom of the room next door. And it's like that, you know, you hear that stuff.
Oh yeah.
But if I hear that and then I wake up and smell roses and then I find a woman from the 1700s standing next to the fireplace, I'm going to sign the little book, tell the person at the front desk my story, and then I'm leaving. Okay.
Right.
You can keep the deposit. You know, it's all yours.
It was a good 2-hour sleep, but I'm done now.
Well, that's the thing. If I'm at a hotel, the one thing that I will do at every single hotel I visit is sleep there. Okay? So if this is going on, guess what I'm not going to be doing? Sleeping. So, you know, I might as well just move along. But one reason.
Valid point.
What now?
Valid point.
Yeah. One reason King's Tavern has become so well known in paranormal circles is that numerous investigation teams have spent time inside. They've reported unexplained voices captured on recording devices, sudden cold spots, equipment behaving strangely, and shadowy movement during investigations. Now, as we've said many times before, none of that proves ghosts exist. You know, electronic voice phenomena, EVPs, they're pretty controversial. I mean, because equipment can malfunction and photos can be misinterpreted. It's important to approach every investigation with a healthy dose of skepticism. But whether you're a believer or a skeptic, there is no denying that King's Tavern has earned a reputation. The combination of documented history, a centuries-old murder legend, human remains reportedly discovered inside the walls, and decades of unexplained experiences have made it one of Mississippi's most talked about haunted locations. So, is Madeline still wandering the tavern where she supposedly lived and died? Is the smell of roses really her calling card? Or has one good ghost story simply become part of the building's identity after being told for generations? I mean, we leave that up to you. But if you ever find yourself in Natchez and someone asks if you'd like the table by the old fireplace, you just might want to look around first and make sure there's not someone already sitting there. Okay?
True.
You know, we said at the beginning, how much activity could possibly go on in this one little building? And, I mean, guests consistently report all of these things that I just discussed. So, the age, the history, you know, the fact that they found human remains pretty much locks it in for me. There's some spiritual energy that is trapped in that old little building. And there's a really good chance that if you spend the night there, you might experience something. Again, it may not be something slapping you in the face. But I've always said, you know, you've got to drown out all the noise around you to see something that is much more subtle, but just as important. And in some cases, you know, just as creepy. So, King's Tavern might be a really good place, you know, to have that kind of experience. And even if you don't, you know, you visited one of the oldest buildings in the United States. So you can always fall back on that.
Right.
But what do you guys think? I mean, we've got I looked it up. The population of Natchez is probably, you know, around 15,000 or less. Okay. Small town, lot of activity, even though it may not be, you know, banging on the door, right in your face hauntings. There's an awful lot of reports. And that's the one thing that ties these all together is all these guests are consistently reporting these weird little experiences for years and years and years. So at some point you just have to go, yeah, I think there's something going on in these buildings in this little town. Let us know what you think. If you've been to Natchez, if you visited any of these places that we've talked about tonight and last week, let us know. And one of the best places to do that is in our Facebook group. It is called The Graveyard. It's thousands of people in there sharing things, you know, telling good ghost stories, asking for help, telling jokes, whatever. It's a fun, private group that no one's going to call you a nutcase. We all just like hearing these really good stories. Don't forget to check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show and you can become a patron. And thank you so much to everyone who has donated to the work that Adam and I have done for the last 9 years. We sincerely appreciate it. We couldn't have done it without you. So I think that wraps it up. Our series on Natchez, Mississippi will come to a close tonight. Don't forget to let us know what do you know about Natchez?
Yeah.
You know, maybe you've got a place there that you know about that we didn't discuss. Let us know. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.